Continuing with first canto Bhagavatam. The section that we're going to read from, the verses are thematically, there's a presentation here about the distinction between karma yoga, also used in the Sanskrit here as kriya yoga, so karma yoga or kriya yoga, gyan yoga, the relationship between the two, and bhakti yoga, or the path that Narada is recommending, and the path that he's instructing what the Bhagavatam should be. Reference is made in Prabhupada's purport to a verse that's earlier in this chapter, where Narada is instructing you about the literature. So there's literature that describes these things, and there's actions where they manifest these things. Literature that the verse that he's referring to is 1.5.12, Naishkarmyam api achuta bhavam vivarjitam nishobhate jnanam alam niranjanam. An often quoted verse, famous verse. It's within Narada's instructions about the type of literature that he wants Vyasa to compose, or the type of literature that will make the author satisfied, the type of literature that will give proper direction to the reader to reach the goal of life and thus satisfy the reader. So 1.5.12 is now being explained. So he, as I expressed yesterday, he's giving principles early in the chapter of what the Srimad Bhagavatam should be. He's using his own life as an example of one who follows the principles that he just explained. So theory and practice, in other words. He's the model in practice. Here's the theory. So we have to clearly understand what that theory is in order for us to properly practice it. So we'll speak on the theory. We'll go to the practice. We'll refer back to the theory so we're clear what it is. Naishkarmyam. What does naishkarmya means? Naishkarma. It's a phrase that Baladeva Vidyabhusan particularly uses in reference to chapter 3, chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita. Naishkarmya. Or it's work performed in the spirit of detachment. Detachment not from the work, but detachment from the fruits of the work. When it's said that you should be detached, perform detached work, it doesn't mean become lazy. You'll go to the office 4 days of the week instead of five. Be detached. You get fired. You get really detached. And really don't try very hard because you should be forming detached work. It's detached from the fruit. So that's not, as Prabhupada explains, people don't know that. It's either like karma tyag or be attached to the fruits of the work, or be attached. There's that karma palatyag. That's not on the radar screen. They can't figure that one out. Because the spirit of attached work is so strong. The reason the spirit of attached work is so strong is because of the bodily conception of life. I want to enjoy. And I'm this body. So I need to work hard. So I can have some fruits. So I can enjoy. 1, 2, 3. And if you take away, you're not this body, then people think, well, why should I work? Like, you know, I'm starting to get into Krishna consciousness and I'm losing interest in work. I don't want to go to work anymore. I just like Krishna consciousness. Like Arjuna, armed with knowledge, stand and fight. Well, why are you giving me these equivocal instructions? First you say knowledge is better than fruitive work. And then you send me out in the battlefield to engage in fruitive work. It's not fruitive work. It's devotional service. It's not fruitive work. But it looked like fruitive work to the fruitive worker. And therefore they say, you're doing the same thing we are. What's the difference? Forget you guys. You're just sentimentalists. Isn't it? So, there's a reason why this instruction comes in the third chapter, in the fifth chapter, now here it is in the Bhagavatam. It's a message that, unless we're on the spiritual plane, we don't get. We can go along sentimentally and saying, yes, I'm performing devotional service in the bodily conception of life, and I'm a devotee. But then, how are we going to get a taste for chanting if we just remain lazy? Not going to happen. You have to get on the spiritual platform, and that's what Vyasa saw. Vyasa saw too much affinity for matter. So let me make a program where they can slowly, ever so slowly, lifetimes of slowly, getting the enjoyment they want through yajna, sacrifice, and gradually getting elevated to the mode of goodness where the slackening of affinity for matter happens. And then, knowledge of Brahman. And then, when they're at that platform, then devotional service to Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Well, my dear Vyas, Narada is saying, people aren't going to get there because they have too much affinity for matter. You haven't solved the problem. So you're not satisfied and they're not going to be satisfied. So directly describe the personality of Godhead. And that will purify one from affinity for matter by awakening the dormant, directly awakening the dormant consciousness of the relationship with the personality of Godhead. And then direct the activities of one's life, the propensities that one has, the strong affinities that one has for doing certain things. Engaging that which for which we have specific attraction. So there are types of work we have specific attraction for because it's born of our nature, born of the impulses of the modes, where some person's more inclined to this and some person's more, you know. What's your best subject in school? Math and science? Math. English? Kind of, see? It's, you know, and it's all of us. There's something we have propensities for. I know some people, they do great in English, and they do lousy in science and math. We have different propensities. That's fine. And propensity means we like to do it. We have an urge to do it. We can do well at it. And it binds us to the material conception of life, to think of ourselves in terms of, that's me. The bodily conception leads to the particular outlet for fruitive work. So, once again, the spiritual path doesn't say, cut your propensities. Just chop them down, put them in a blender, turn it on high speed, and you come out a smoothie. It doesn't say that. But the consciousness behind should be addressed. So the hearing and chanting practices are to strengthen our attraction to Krishna. And then also understand the science of devotional service, how to apply a thing that we have attraction to therapeutically. It doesn't bind us. It's an expression of an offering to Krishna. But it's not just by putting on tilak and wearing kunti mala that everything gets offered to Krishna. It's a consciousness. It's not the externals. It's what's inside, the consciousness inside. How attentive we are to the person who we're making the offering to. So in text 33, Narada says to Vyasa, great soul, does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which caused that very same thing? So he's explaining the principle of changing material conception of a thing to a spiritual conception of the same thing. The medium is devotional service, or offering that thing to Krishna. The material conception of a thing is at once changed as soon as it is put into the service of the Lord. He gives the example of iron. That's a thing. And you put the iron in fire, and it becomes like fire, although it's iron, because of contact with fire. So Prabhupada's language is just as by fire iron is made red hot and thereby the action of fire begins, so similarly activities have to be spiritualized. So we're familiar with this. We do it all the time. But so this is giving the science of it. It's the consciousness of the rendering unto the service of the Lord. He writes again, a material thing, so called, is at once turned into a spiritual force by the inconceivable great will of the Lord. Remember yesterday evening the most confidential subject matter the sages taught to Narada, and then the most confidential part of that most confidential understanding is Krishna wants the souls to return to him. He's more than prepared. He's eager to bring the souls to him. And now they have this affinity for matter. So he's willing to accept those items of matter which they have affinity for, propensity towards engaging, and have those as offerings unto him. Provided, you know, that you have a very clear conception of who is him, who is the supreme, and the act of offering. Now all of this is Kriya Yoga or Karma Yoga. Very language is used. Evam Nrinam Kriya Yoga. There's a group in America that may exist also in India, they say they practice Kriya Yoga. And their idea of Kriya Yoga is kind of a smorgasbord. They, you know, yes, we practice bhakti too. Kriya Yoga is everything. But their idea of bhakti is what's described here. You know, that's the topmost stage. And what Prabhupada is describing is that's not the topmost stage. It's rendering, it's something that we do, but as well, we offer things to Krishna that are material. The specific emphasis that makes bhakti specific is it's not just taking something we're attached to and offering it to Krishna, it's recognizing what our constitutional position is. It goes, it drills down more deeply to level of consciousness and our constitutional identity that's awakened by the hearing and chanting process, specifically Nam Sankirtan and also the direction of scriptures, so we can clearly understand who we are and who Krishna is and our relationship with Him. And always, not just when we're chanting japa or attending class, always in our family activities and working activities and shopping activities and paying our mortgage and all of our activities, always in the consciousness of serving Krishna. Not secular, but pervasive consciousness of serving Krishna. So this is where this subtle thing happens, where karma yoga or kriya yoga becomes bhakti yoga. But within bhakti yoga, the subset of bhakti yoga is there's this kriya yoga or karma yoga seeming aspect. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada does this. Sometimes he speaks of karma yoga like it's bhakti yoga. And it's, you know, A equals B. And that's with the perspective that the whole subject matter of Bhagavad Gita is about reaching Krishna. That's bhakti yoga. So you can't reach Krishna just by offering things. Otherwise, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't have said, yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad the talk with Ramananda Roy. That's external. Because you can offer things to Krishna without understanding your constitutional position and doing so out of love for Him. You can do so just because you don't want the bondage of the work. Here's my problems, Krishna. My bondage problems. And now I'm liberated. And without the proper mood of love in our constitutional position. Therefore, just read this. In the purport of 33, Prabhupada writes, when everything is thus employed in the service of the Lord, we can experience that there is nothing except the Supreme Brahman. The Vedic mantra that everything is Brahman, quote, like Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, is thus realized by us. So it can be impersonal. I'm liberated. I am Brahman. Everything is Brahman. The book is Brahman. The floor is Brahman. The wall is Brahman. You're Brahman. Nice to meet you. We're all Brahman. Everything is Brahman. And that's a philosophical point, which Prabhupada is going to explain in a moment, is only possible, the realization of that is only possible through non-fruitive work. Say it the other way. As long as there's fruitive work, you don't get that realization. Transcendental knowledge issues out of, springs out of detachment. Say it again. Attachment blocks knowledge. That's what Vyas sought. Too much affinity for matter. And so the soul is covered. The possibility of realizing the soul, realizing the happiness of the soul, what to speak of the Supreme Soul, more confidential, what to speak of most, it's not going to happen. It can't happen. It can't happen. because of too much affinity for matter. So this is a problem. Because we all want to be happy, and our idea of being happy is we have stuff to enjoy. Isn't it? It's universal. This. During this fall semester of colleges, visiting colleges, I've been making a presentation, as I made at the Festival of Inspiration, on spiritual economics. And my realization from going through again and again all this research that who knows how many millions and millions and millions of dollars and hours of high-minded people, professors and researchers have put in to come to the conclusion of the same thing that's already there in the Bhagavatam. I mean, everything is already there. Everything is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is in Prabhupada's books. And with an absolute perspective, not just people can't be satisfied by accumulating things. There's one professor in 1974 from University of Pennsylvania who was an economics professor, and he did studies to see the post-war boom of the economy of America. Were people more happy because now they have more things? And the conclusion was they're less happy. Although they have twice as many things. The income level by 1974 was double what it was from the time he started doing the research in the post-war era. So he became famous for stating this paradox. Happiness decreases the more you have. Hey, just should have read Srimad Bhagavatam. Knowledge, you know, real knowledge, real happiness. Knowledge, you know, knowledge of the self means happiness. When it's internal. Happiness within is that happiness of the quality of goodness. You go over to the side of passion, you lose that happiness within, you become unhappy. And they have all these sophisticated ways of studying the varieties of unhappiness. And very nice, sophisticated, very expensive, costly, PhD-winning ways of the varieties of unhappiness. But it's the unhappiness. And that very language, yenatma suprasidati, like from Bhagavad Gita, the prasanatma, brahma-bhuta prasanatma, na sochati na kaṃkṣati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, mad bhaktim bhavate param. When it comes to devotee, it's the platform of devotional service. So, we're mixed devotees. Now, we're doing devotional service and we have sochati and kaṃkṣati. So, we're suffering. We want something, we want to be the enjoyer of something material. And so, we're given a process. This karma yoga principle is how to dovetail those propensities in service to Krishna. But that's not going to really take us to Krishna, even this Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, or this realization of everything is Brahman, if we maintain attachment, just like the tenth offense against the chanting of the holy name. Not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, instead go into this default mode. Maintaining. It's not just kind of casually, it's holding on tightly to maintaining. Attachments. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we find there's a curve often. Someone's, you know, going along with their life and then they take up Krishna consciousness and zoom, 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 zoom. Then they hit the ceiling of those things that are attached to. They don't want to let go. Then it's kind of plateau, and then something like that. And then they don't like that feeling. So it's, what's going on? And there has to be a reset of why one takes up Krishna consciousness in order to and continuously renew that commitment to reach Krishna, not just Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukratan Arjuna Dhani Artarti Jigyasur. One has to come to this position that Narada is describing through his own life and describing in principle, where reaching Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, becomes our primary objective, more and more and more and more clearly focused, strong. The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord. By so doing, one's activity is changed into karma yoga. Sounded like bhakti, didn't it? But it's karma yoga. Or the way by which one can attain spiritual perfection while engaging in the work for which he has a natural tendency. So the question is, whose satisfaction am I looking for here? Me, 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 me. Krishna too, but me, 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 me. I want to release from the bondage of my work, so I offer Krishna, so I'll become happy. And I'll get some knowledge, and I feel good when I have some knowledge about me. Krishna is very nice too. And it's not a bucket where it's just like, okay, that's karma yoga over here and there's bhakti yoga over here. Those are stages, but it's a gradual stage where our affinity for Krishna becomes stronger through hearing and chanting and detached work. Working for Krishna, where the object becomes stronger, then that's bhakti. So now I'm going to, this is Prabhupada summarizing this whole section of Narada instructing Vyas and Narada giving his own example. When you read in Prabhupada's purports, he says, therefore, or in conclusion, or in summary, your antenna should go up. Okay, so now he's making it real easy for us slow people. Here's what he really wants us to capture. So he says it three times in two purports. So here we go. The conclusion is that when the result of all fruitive and other work is dovetailed with the service of the Lord, it will cease to generate further karma. The result is dovetailed with the service of the Lord. It will cease to generate further karma and will gradually develop into transcendental devotional service, which will not only cut off completely the root of the banyan tree of work, but will also carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. So we're in this, somewhere in this mixed devotion. We have to be very clear as followers of Rupa Goswami. What's the goal? Pure devotional service. Yes, pure devotional service. Anyabhilashata shunyam. Zippo, zero, shunyam, jnana, karma, dhanavritam, pure devotional service. Anukogena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. That's the followers of Rupa Goswami. That's our goal. And we're not there yet. We should be clear that we're not there yet and strive for the goal. Be clear what the goal is. So gradually, this mix of attraction, affinity, will become pure affinity for Krishna by following strongly the hearing and chanting process and dedicating our activities to Krishna, not mindlessly doing things, devotionally doing things for Krishna, all the worldly things that we do for Krishna. That brings us closer to pure devotion. So now that's the theory. Now here's the example of the theory. That's Narada's life. The summary is that one has to, first of all, seek the association of pure devotees who not only are learned in Vedanta, but are self-realized souls and unalloyed devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. That's what happened to Narada. The Bhaktivedantas came to the inn and he was just a little boy. He got their association. In that association, the neophyte devotees must render loving service physically and mentally without reservation. Not just do and be, you know, out to lunch, absent-minded. Or just in your mind, gee, I wish I could, but physically and mentally. Opportunities arise, then you physically. So it's the mood of service and the practical activities. This service attitude will induce the great souls to be more favorable in bestowing their mercy, which injects the neophyte with all transcendental qualities of the pure devotees, because Narada described, oh, in their association, that my playfulness, sportiveness, running around, talking, being like a little kid, I was very peaceful. My mind was in control, my senses, although he's just a small boy. The influence of that association, because his heart was very open and his practical service mood was being exhibited. He invoked their mercy and received it. Gradually, this is developed into a strong attachment to hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies, and beyond them, the knowledge of the pure soul and his eternal relation with the Supreme Soul, the Personality and Godhead. After the relation is ascertained by establishment of the eternal relation, pure devotional service to the Lord begins, gradually developing into perfect knowledge of the Personality and Godhead beyond the purview of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. By such Purushottama Yoga, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one is made perfect even during the present corporeal existence, and one exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord to the highest percentage, such as the gradual development by association of pure devotees. Just in one paragraph summarized Narada's life. All of it Narada had just shared with Vyas. And he is now given the principles that are being exhibited by that. So that we can understand, okay, we're not Narada. We're far less than Narada. But, you know, Narada was certainly obscure, and he had some opportunity by Krishna's mercy, and these are the steps he underwent, so we need to follow that, however long it takes. The principles must be exercised regularly by us. Then the Bhagavatam wants to give us this stage of perfection. Narada wants to give us the stage of perfection. Vyas wants to give us. Our acharyas want to give us. So we just have to increase our eagerness factor. And take up the component steps one by one, very carefully. Then, the last verse that we'll discuss this morning, text 35. Whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga. Almost the same sentence, that's the verse. The previous purport, Prabhupada addressed it as karma yoga. So, I don't know if those of you that have like an engineering mind or a scientific mind or a computer, it's a one or a zero, binary kind of a mind. You know, which is it? First it's karma yoga, then it's bhakti yoga, then it's karma yoga, then... So, just again, it's not a bucket, but it's a question of, both are accurate depending upon where one's attachment lies. How strong is the attachment for a self-centered purpose? I want knowledge, or I want release from the bondage of my work. I have some attraction for the Supreme, and then, you know, it's like a dimmer switch. It gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and detraction goes for pleasing the Lord. He's given some gift. I have some ability to do something. Let me take that gift, use that something for Him. However simple it may be. However simple it may be. You know, like I saw as we were driving back yesterday, somebody out on a Friday evening in their garden. You know, many people on Friday night, they're doing other things besides out in their garden. So maybe the man liked gardening instead of television or something, or going to the bar or whatever else people do. He's out there growing something in his garden. He likes it. Probably feels peaceful doing it. After all the crazy things at the office, just Friday night, let me go out in the garden and hang out in the vegetables. I know somebody that has ADD. I forget what that stands for, but attention deficit disorder. So they get, they're in a PhD program, and they have to do a lot of study, and they get like really stressed out. They found it's very therapeutic. Just go in the garden and talk to the plants and be peaceful. So there may be many reasons why people do things. So bhakti is to do it for Krishna. Maybe they like vegetables to offer to their family so it's fresh and wholesome. It's not filled with pesticides and stuff. Or whatever the reasons are, if those reasons can be moved, whatever propensities we have for whatever the reasons the propensities are there, move them more and more to the position of doing it for Krishna. Then it becomes bhakti. Anyabhilashta shunyam gyanakarma janavata. Anukulina. So, Krishna anushilana, following, becoming attached to the previous perfected souls. And how they live their lives. Of course, we're individuals, so we're going to live our lives in somewhat of a different way, but in principle, dedicated to the Supreme. Then you surpass sarvam kalvidam brahma. That everything is the mercy of Krishna. Even the bad stuff that happens, it's the mercy of Krishna. Because there's no bad stuff when in relation to Krishna. There's something with a message from Krishna in everything that happens. That's a very elevated platform, but that's Krishna consciousness. So, whatever work is done here, in this life, for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga. Not just dovetailing, but for the mission of the Lord. Or transcendental loving service to the Lord. And what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. So now, those of you that are knowledgeable a little bit in Bhagavatam, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. Hey, there's that nice verse that explains the principle. Nara's describing the literature that brings out that principle. Now he's giving his own life. Because through Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, devotional service unto Vasudeva, knowledge and detachment follow as concomitant factors. And what is that detachment? Again, it's not, don't go to the office. It's detachment is detachment from material affinity, being the enjoyer of that. The happiness is, I like it being in the office, or I don't like it being in the office. It's not, you know, you like or you don't like. It's service, whatever is service to Krishna. So if that's service to Krishna, then do it for Krishna. If it's not service for Krishna, don't do it. Is it service for Krishna? Do it for Krishna. Supposing someone's not at that stage, then you dovetail. Then it's mixed. I do my hearing and chanting, and I do those things that I like, and I offer the fruits to Krishna. But if there's not, very important point, if one is not envious or resentful of the platform of Shuddha Bhakti, that can lead one to Shuddha Bhakti. It's not like, oh, you're down there. That's not Krishna's perspective. Maybe it's, you know, an immature devotee's perspective, but it's not Krishna's perspective. He's loving, and he accepts our love. And he gives us the means that our love can grow. Our offerings to him can become more filled with love for him. Therefore, this back and forth thing, Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, seems to be woven back and forth like, which one is it? But it's encouragement to come further on the path. But all of it is supported by the hearing and chanting process. That's Bhagavat Mark, or Srimad Bhagavatam, glorification of Krishna, so that we can become attached to him. Purport. The general and popular notion is that this, by discharging fruitive work, in terms of the direction of scriptures, one becomes perfectly able to acquire transcendental knowledge for spiritual realization. Well, Prabhupada pushes that off the table onto the floor. Such persons think bhakti yoga is another form of karma. Bhakti yoga is above both karma and gyan. Bhakti yoga is independent of karma and gyan. On the other hand, gyan and karma are dependent upon bhakti yoga. Now here's how the Kriya Yoga and Karma Yoga fits into bhakti. The Kriya Yoga or Karma Yoga, as recommended by Sri Narada to Vyas, like all this discussion is, do this Kriya Yoga program, is specifically recommended because the principle is to satisfy the Lord. It will lead one to that position of Shuddha Bhakti, if one follows it in the right spirit. The Lord does not want his sons, the living beings, to suffer the threefold miseries of life. He desires that all of them come to him and live with him. But going back to God, it means that one must purify himself from all material infections. When work has been performed, therefore, to satisfy the Lord, karma yoga, the performer becomes gradually purified from material affection, which connects back to what Vyas saw. He saw too much affinity for matter, not enough affinity for the Lord. So join hearing and chanting at the foundation, hearing and chanting, then offering things that we have propensities to do, the dovetailing program. Now, with the understanding, the purpose is not that we stop doing those activities at some point in time. In the liberated stage, Arjuna is thinking, well, in the liberated stage, can I not go on that battlefield? And Krishna says, no, even the liberated souls, they perform activities to show example to others how to. So even the liberated stage, not for the same purpose of getting released from bondage, but for showing example to those who are in bondage. We still do things. So purification from material affection means attainment of spiritual knowledge. So catch what's happening here. Knowledge is dependent on karma, Prabhupada writes, or detached work. To have the capacity to have transcendental knowledge, you have to have the capacity to be non-fruitive in your work. Or the fruitive, say the other way around. Fruitive tendency covers knowledge. It covers the soul, makes everything dark. So we have this in Bhagavad Gita, the flow is Arjuna wants to know what's my duty. And Krishna says, before we talk about duty, let's talk about who you are. Your soul. Now we'll talk about detached working in the world. Then you can have knowledge. And Arjuna is thinking, great, knowledge. Knowledge. The end of chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. Knowledge is so wonderful. It can free one from all the bondage of past sinful activities. Knowledge permits one to cross over the ocean of material existence. Knowledge is so wonderful. And Arjuna is thinking, yes, knowledge. Now you don't have to go and fight. Because Krishna is saying knowledge is better than fruitive work. There's the battlefield. Armed with knowledge, stand and fight. So Arjuna doesn't get it. He's making like he doesn't get it, taking the position of one who doesn't. And because we also have a problem, thinking, you know, being spiritual means don't work. Being spiritual means doing whatever you do with love for Krishna. Well, we don't have love for Krishna in our heart. It's covered. So being spiritual means do nothing. Go and meditate. Be peaceful. And they see, you know, materialist devotees being so active, they think, oh, you guys, same. You're like us. Or they feel good, oh, you're just like us. You're just like us. But one who is pure in devotion will be very active in all varieties of life. But the real test is this detachment from affinity for matter and attachment to Krishna. Therefore, knowledge is dependent on karma or work done on behalf of the Lord. Other knowledge being devoid of bhakti yoga or satisfaction of the Lord cannot lead one back to the kingdom of God, which means that it cannot even offer salvation. As already explained in connection with the stanza Naishkarmya Apiyachuta Bhavam Vivarjitam. That's this verse earlier. Nashobate Gyanam Alam Niranjanam Kutak Punak Shashvat Abhadra Ishware Nacharpitam Karma Yad Api Akaranam. So now we're just full swing around. He's given a statement to Vyas. He's given his life, and now he's explaining through his life what that verse meant. This is the literature I want you to write. Don't write literature that's just explaining how to do fruitive activities nicely, like all these self-help books. Fruitive activities nicely. Mode of goodness. Or, what to speak of, if that doesn't, you know, the position of knowledge of transcendence devoid of a conception of the Supreme, that's not going to satisfy. If that's not going to satisfy, what to speak of this fruit of activities done nicely? So you've given Karmakanda and Gyanakanda, Vyas, but let's have some Shuddha Bhakti. Then you'll be satisfied, and the persons who hear that, their affinity for matter will slacken, their activities can be dedicated unto the Supreme, and gradually their attachment to the Supreme will grow. Write such literature. And his life is an example. The stages were outlined just previous purport. Okay, so any discussion on this subject? Yes.
We have to dovetail all our activities for Krishna.
Yeah.
Now, there are some activities we do every day. Say, for example, sleeping. How can we dovetail sleeping to Krishna?
It's practical. Try not sleeping. So it's something we require to do. And so to keep the body fit so that we can be healthy and we can be alert, we do that for Krishna. Not too much, not too little. What we require for Krishna. So that this covering of the soul can be maintained and can be used properly as an instrument for Krishna. Otherwise it can become unhealthy with too much or too little. Or the consciousness becomes dull. Or we're too little sleep and we're, you know, sleeping through our chanting and sleeping through life. Each thing that's God-given has a purpose, and we use that thing, if it's appropriate in service to Krishna, we use it in that consciousness. Yes?
Should we do all the activities like for the service of Krishna?
Yeah.
But like for example, like sometimes we have to decide among activities. Like for example, I have like a lot of office work, and I have to do some service in temple. Then how do I make like a decision, you know, like, but like even like my office work is like an offering to Krishna, you know, so like,
yes,
like how can I like make that
okay
decision?
Let's just assume you know, there's it's like the question is a time management question. So a practical way to manage time is to make blocks of time. This is my time for sleeping. This is my time for chanting. This is my time for reading, hearing. This is my time for worship. This is my time for my family. This is my time for work. This is the, and, you know, some kind of flexibility has to be there. We can't just be like totally rigid. But we also have to be, you know, not let that block of time just get mushed. So, a common frame of time management is by the week. So we have our day by day, but then there's the week. And sometimes, you know, there's an ebb and flow at work. Probably sometimes there's more demand, sometimes there's less demand. So we have to be a little flexible, but there's also a limit when we say, you know, that's enough. So that while we're doing each thing, we're giving our undivided attention to that thing. Or chanting is chanting. You're not planning. You're not, you know, thinking of the past. You're present with the holy name. And then when you're at work, you give your full attention, and then when the time is there, that chunk of time is now elapsed, and some passion wants to keep pushing it, and your mode of goodness says, no, I have these other things that are very important to me, and I go on to the next thing. You know, that's a general rule. Then there's situations in people's lives where the employer or the ethic in the workplace is something else besides respecting the individual. It's just get the project done, and now let's get two projects done, let's get five projects done, let's get 10. You know, they have nothing other ethic in their life than getting work done. So that's not a good work environment for a devotee. I'll see you guys later. I'm finding another job. So you can work things till you have that situation. Some flexibility, yes, but not, you know, unlimited passion. Fruitive goals and objectives for our company, because we want to be number one. And leave the other values of life behind. That's our one ethic, is becoming number one. Then such people are unethical in so many other ways. Just happens that way, not by accident. And that's not another reason why it's not a healthy environment. So you, each of us has to stay in touch with our values and periodically not just go with the flow, whichever push comes strongest, that's what we do, or a pull. We have values that we live by. We decide. We plan according to our values. And then we execute. Then people come to know, oh, this is something that's this individual, they like to spend some time in the garden. They like to spend some time at the temple. They like to. One of the statements of this spiritual economics, there's a little video, and the narrator is saying, you know, that research shows that since the feudal times, people today have far less discretionary time than ever before, because it's so much passion, it's so much produce or consume. So devotees choose to not live that life. We choose to live a life where we put things that we really value and that goes in every day or every week. we value the association of devotees. We may not be able to go and have gatherings like this every day of the week, but it's in our week. We plan it that way. And that means I won't do certain other things. I'm not going to be part of a company that just, they're mad. So we make decisions. Whatever the consequences of that, we accept because we made, this is a value that we have. And then continue to pursue that. Allowing some flexibility, but be consistent over time. Yeah. The difference between Kriya Yoga and Prabhupada's using them interchangeably. Kriya, like the implication of the term Kriya is to do something. And karma specifically is work. They're very close. But the word Kriya is used directly in the Sanskrit of these verses, twice. Yet atra kriyate karma. Kriyate does perform karma, work. To do something. What do? You do work. And in the previous verse, evam nrinam kriya yogaha. Kriya yogaha, translated as all activities. So, in the translation, those very activities which cause perpetual bondage. To do work, kriya, karma. Yes. Yeah.
So where does Ashtanga Yoga fit in?
It's a process of meditation. The Ashta Anga, that's eight limbs of the Bhagavad Gita chapter is Dhyan Yoga. It's meditation. So if you go in the yoga ladder, it's a meditation, is fixing the mind, it leads to paramatma realization. So there's bondage to work, attachment to fruitive work, regulated work where fruits are offered unto the Supreme, detachment leads to knowledge. Knowledge, when it becomes more and more concentrated, leads to meditation. Constant meditation. Formal, constant meditation. Then, just like in the Sankhya system of Kapila, meditation upon the Supreme. One's relationship with the Supreme. In that state of trance, one is engaged in practical activities of devotion to the Supreme on the spiritual platform. It's a transcendental process also. If you like, it's the fourth. And then dhyan is included in bhakti, karma is included in bhakti, and gyan is included in bhakti. So like Prabhupada is saying here, they're dependent upon bhakti, and bhakti is independent from them. But they're a subset of bhakti. And dhyana also. Meditation on Krishna. Like Krishna says to Arjuna, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. Okay? Yes.
Maharaj, as you said that in Karma Yoga, we do activities for Krishna, and then when that attachment to Krishna becomes very a lot, that attachment is there, then it's Bhakti Yoga. So, and this process is hearing and chanting along with the Karma Yoga. So, what is the effort required from our side so that that attachment increases also? Because as you said, that just dovetailing will not help, because...
It's not, I didn't say it won't help. It will help. It's recommended. It will help.
Still remain, if one still remains attached.
Well, then it's not dovetailing. Then it's, you know, like, you know, so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me. So much for me, so much for me, so much for Krishna. I got two pockets here. Dovetailing means something that I enjoy, but it's progressively. So your question is, what effort must we make? The foremost effort that we must make is the quality of our sadhana. The quality of our direct activities of hearing and chanting and the nine processes of bhakti. Everything comes from how we chant the holy name. And then you can go further with that. You know, how we chant the holy name depends so much upon the, we covered this yesterday evening, but the mercy that we're receiving from those who are guiding us in the path of bhakti. You know, our submission to those who are giving us the chanting, giving us the process of devotional service, strengthening those connections and our submission, then we have more strength than to apply to our effective chanting. We should be, to what do we apply our attention, was your question, or to receiving mercy? Then a subset of that one is we need to be very careful about offenses. Because that can block the mercy real fast. And another indication, just in that nice little paragraph, just turn it off. In that nice little paragraph of the stages of bhakti, the mood of service, happily, with mind, with body, not just with body and absent-minded, or just in the mind and not doing, with mind and body, very happily, in a nice happy mood of serving. It purifies. It helps bring detachment. It helps invoke the mercy of those who are mercy distributors. But all of that's like a funnel, and it goes to how we chant the holy name. There's effort, your question, well, what effort do we make? Where do we apply effort? We apply effort in reaching and in receiving. Being fit recipients of mercy and eagerly making effort according to the instructions we receive. Making strong that connection. Yes, Mataji? We keep association with devotees that are very kind, and they'll help us see that which we can't see. We've certainly had the experience, I'm sure, all of us, where we're in the association of someone who, they're a nice devotee, and there's something they just can't see, that we can easily see. But we're very cautious to not just like let them have it, because they may not be so happy to hear it. So now turn it around. We're that somebody, and if we are happy to be in the association of devotees who are so kind that they'll share with us things that we can't see, we're very fortunate. If we have that association and an eagerness to hear and share with others. That's one. That's a peer level. Then there's scripture. If you go to scripture and you're open, you're receptive, there'll be things that you'll hear that will help you. Then another, a third, is just through the process of devotional service itself. As our consciousness becomes purified, then we will be able to recognize things that we previously weren't able to recognize. But that's common experience. Before devotional service began for any one of us, we didn't have a clue of so many things that are really important to make advancement in spiritual life. Although we may have had an idea that we wanted spiritual life, we didn't have a clue. And then as we made advancement, we found, oh, look at this, and oh my God, look at that, and then we become embarrassed, we want to go hide, because there's all this dirty stuff. And then more and more and more. So by the process of devotional service itself, it uncovers that which may be deeply embedded. But those are the ones that are, we need to give the most effort. At the same time, we need to be the most patient, because they're the ones that are most deeply rooted. Some things we can just give up right away and hurry bowl. Some other things we very carefully guard and maintain, even though they're hurtful to ourselves and others. It doesn't make sense. It's just stupid. It's just attachment. It's very unfortunate. And something that's in this paragraph that I read, you know, the summary is that nice paragraph. A fourth item, is the association of great souls. And just being in the association of great souls and hearing from those great souls, there's this mercy thing that happens that's just, one gets benefited. I'm sure we all, those that attended this festival of inspiration, had our moments of experiencing that. Just, wow. Okay. Overall, faith in the process of bhakti will carry us beyond our limitations. We should be eager to go beyond our limitations, knowing that, just as you said, for each of us, there are some things that are impurities or shortcomings or contaminations that we have to get past them to get to Krishna. And we're not even so much aware of what they are. So we need help. We need mercy. From whatever agency Krishna wants to send that mercy, we need that mercy. We need to make effort, but we also need mercy so we can go beyond those things. And that's the mood of a devotee. Krishna helps, he empowers that mood in different ways. Something else? I'm just, because I, can we go this way?
My question is that how to get detached but still do the work perfectly, because there are two situations where in one situation when one tries to do work perfectly, he gets attached to the fruits of the results. And in the second case, when he try to do, when try to get detached from the fruits of the results, he lose the interest doing the work perfectly.
Right.
So how to avoid this situation?
I've noticed both tendencies. in one word, Krishna. The art of work is to do it for Krishna. And that leads to detachment, but it also leads to perfection. So say the same thing differently. There's a question of who is at the center. Me or my boss up there who wants to see me do it perfectly, and my business is to satisfy my boss up there who wants to see it done perfectly. Or Krishna. Who am I serving? It's the art of work. It's the challenge that those who are householders must come into the, you know, the laboratory of life and learn the art of doing it for Krishna. You know, the mothers at home, they have... The arena is different, but the principle is the same. Do it for Krishna. Not because I like. Mothers like. But do it for Krishna. Not out of attachment. Or detachment. But do it for Krishna. Etc. Then you have both. Prabhupada's teaching was that, he said it different ways. A devotee is never inattentive to ordinary dealings. Detachment would say, oh, it's just an ordinary dealing, I don't have to pay attention to it. But a devotee doesn't see any dealing as ordinary, they see it as for Krishna. They're more attentive than an attached materialist, but in a different kind of, different quality of attentiveness. So what they're striving for is not perfection in the execution, material execution, but they're attentive to pleasing Krishna, a subset of which is the details of execution. Because it's for Krishna. They're cooking an offering. We have some guests coming. We have to make something very nice. But higher than that is to please Krishna. Then it's always very nice. Yes.
What is bhakti yoga?
What is bhakti yoga? Yabhilashatushandyam. Jnana karma dinavratam anukoyena krishna nursivanam bhaktir uttama. You know that verse? Rupa Goswami defines bhakti by that verse. Because the topic of nectar devotion is about devotion or devotional service. So what is devotional service? That's what it is. Where? Abhilash. Do you know any other boys named Abhilash? Abhilash? Abhilash is means a desire. where there is no desire for anything else but Krishna. Anya means other. Anya abhilash, shunya, zero. Like nirvishesha shunyavadi, pastyachadi, shunya, zippo. Other desires are absent. Which other desires? Jnana, karma, dhyanavritam. Avritam. Eliminated, gone. Finished. So what's there? That's what bhakti isn't. Then what is it? Anukulyena Krishna Nushilana. It's the cultivation. Anukul, Prabhupada describes in the preface, or introduction rather, of Nectar of Devotion. Bhakti is a type of cultivation. So cultivation, the implication of cultivation is, we may not be there yet, but we're working on it. Like sometimes that word cultivation is used with agriculture, gardening. You cultivate a garden. You plant some seeds. You put in some water. Have some nice sunlight. And whoop, up comes the nice thing you planted. But so there's also some weeds. You have to pull out the weeds and keep watering the plant. And that's cultivation. So cultivating bhakti is a type of cultivation of what? Krishna anushilana. It's shilana means behavior, activity, things that you do. Do things that are favorable or pleasing to Krishna. Cultivate like that. Try like that. Strive like that. That's what bhakti is. But without any other purpose, without any other thing growing in your garden, just that one. The jnana weed and the karma weed, toss in the wheelbarrow. Get rid of them. Just this one. Just for Krishna. Bhaktir Uttama. Okay? Rupa Goswami's answer. And then that gets expanded in the form of many other statements in the Nectar of Devotion. That's what bhakti is. It's so many manifestations of that principle.
In Krishna consciousness, we are trying very hard to work through so many of our conditionings. We are also conditioned to fruitive activities, particularly fruitive mentality. So in our devotional service, we have a tendency to enjoy what we do and enjoy the results of what we do and do, particularly when we are doing some kind of preaching. So there are some benefits of preaching.
In so many things.
And how to avoid that fruitive mentality?
Same as the question over here. In one word, Krishna. We just humbly bow out of the position of being at the center and place Krishna at the center. Because otherwise it's a dovetail. I enjoy, Krishna enjoys, we're partners. And bhakti means Krishna enjoys. Because Krishna enjoys, that makes me happy. I enjoy. But Krishna is the best enjoyer, and so I become the best enjoyer by placing Krishna as the number one enjoyer. So that's, again, an art. There's the things we may not like to do or find, or we like to do. And the fruit of tendency is, it's pervasive. It's all about me. So we place Krishna at the center and pray to Krishna for protection from that propensity. And strive to to be always in the mood of just serving. Just serving. Find our happiness in just being servants. So, you know, you can put something on the other side of the pan scale and say, you know, move out of that position of being the preacher and just be the servant. Very nice. My mind is going to a situation where I was with Niranjan Maharaj in Govardhan Puja in Kharkov, Ukraine. To get to Kharkov, we had to drive all the way from Kiev, like so many hours, 8 hours. And it was snowing and cold, and even it was, you know, Kartik time, Govardhan Puja time. It's cold there. And the building we went in for the festival was one of these really old, huge buildings. Like, you know, very ancient, like real strongly built stone things that didn't even have windows. You know, at the time they had wealth and they built the building, and then they didn't have the wealth enough to keep the windows in. So it was, we were, you know, this big hall, and everybody's in their big coats, you know, fur hats, bundled up. And they didn't even do advertising, other than just word of mouth. They didn't put up posters or anything. And there must have been 600 people there. The hall was packed with no heat. They didn't even know what it was. But they're, because they're simple people, they were there, and it was Dhammadharastakam and Kirtan and, you know, swinging the deities and every hour, you know, lighting the candle and offering to Dhammadhar. And then at the end, it was, because I was just watching all of this happening, so we decided, Niranjan Maharaj and I, that we wanted to serve prasadam. We just went up and down the rows and up and down the rows, and it was so nice. You know, being just a servant of all the devotees is very, very satisfying. Of course, the devotees were saying, "No, no, Maharaj, let us do what we want to do." It's nice. Just being a servant. That's happiness. And then you go back to the other position of preaching or whatever, and it's just a servant. Just a servant. I can think of another appropriate example. I'll do it succinctly, but my growing up in Krishna consciousness was as a brahmachari, and I was very happy being a brahmachari for so many years, a brahmachari. And one day my GBC said, "Oh, you're supposed to take sannyas." I said, "Why do I need to take sannyas? I'm happy being a brahmachari." He said, "Well, you know, the GBC passed the resolution. You're supposed to take sannyas." I said, "It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not thinking anything other than renunciation, and I'm very happy. I have got so much service." So I said, "Okay." Then a year passed, and so people kept saying, "But you should take sannyas because there's so much facility for preaching." I said, "Look, all the preaching I'm doing. What facility do I need?" But I just heard it so many times. I just said, "Okay, I'll take sannyas." And then, as soon as the day, from the day of taking sannyas, this very strange, very uncomfortable thing started happening. Of, you know, I'm walking around with my dandan, and everybody comes and pays obeisances because they're supposed to pay obeisances to a sannyasi. So I paid obeisances because that's my brahmachari training. And then they say, "No, no, no, you're not supposed to do that." "What do you mean I'm not supposed to do that? You pay obeisances to devotees. That's what you're supposed to do." "No, no, you're just..." Because it's good for people to pay obeisances to the sannyasi. You're just doing a service. It's not you, it's It's a service. So gradually I started to understand it's just a service. That's all it is. Is it just, it's not, here comes Mr. Swami. It's just a service. It's nice to be in the mood of service, doing whatever you do. So I, you know, pay obeisances or not pay obeisances, receive obeisances, whatever it is. It's, according to circumstance, it's service. That's what's important. Whatever you do. And certainly you've heard it from your Guru Maharaj 500,000 times, at least. The servant of the servant of the servant. So adopt that mood. And then it takes care of that problem you just mentioned, you know, being the enjoyer of just a service. Nice service. Fun service. Because it's happy because it's pleasing to Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. So stay in that mood. Otherwise the whole thing becomes contaminated. And the fruits become spoiled as well. That mood is passed on to those who one trains. One day you'll become a big preacher too. I'll show you how to do it. Anything else? Yes. Yes.
You mentioned bhakti is specifically recognizing what the constitutional position is.
Mm.
And also being in the proper mood of love.
Yeah.
So how do you cultivate the proper mood of love while doing any service? And can you explain a little bit more?
Could you be a little more specific in your question?
Like sometimes when you're doing services, you're not really, I'm thinking I'm doing it sometimes in mechanical fashion.
Uh-huh.
And not really being, so I just want to know how.
Well, the okay. I'll give the same, repeat of the same answer I gave before, and that is how the quality of love in the services that we do can be best enhanced is by the quality of your sadhana. Everything starts from chanting the holy name. The quality of your chanting will determine the quality of your service. Certainly the quality of service will enhance the quality of your chanting, but that from which everything else comes into our life spiritually is the quality of our chanting. And then, say, you know, the quality of our chanting is determined by how we're feeling submissive to the instructions about chanting. And the instructors who are instructing us about in the scriptures. You know, that resource that brings us to the chanting process. Then, like Narada, he received instructions, and he was very submissive. And he carried out the things that he was told, because of the mood was of such appreciation for those sages. He was faithful, but also he wanted to please them. He had trust in their recommendation, but he wanted to please them, and they were very pleased. Seeing that quality in this little boy. How nice. So the quality of love in the services that we do, it's primarily connected to the quality of the sadhana, the core nine processes of bhakti that we do, and the relationships that we have with those who are guiding us and, you know, nurturing our Krishna consciousness. So that loving exchange is vibrant. It's going to come out in everything that we do, because everything we do is an expression of that. It's like Narada, Prahlad, when Prahlad is offered a benediction from Lord Nrisimhadev, he says several things, but one of the things that he says is, I would like more association with Narada. Because through Narada, then I can understand how to serve you better. Because I learned to serve you from Narada. Now I can learn from Narada how to serve you better, because Narada has the mood. And he has all the instructions. And he's before the personality of Godhead, and he wants more association with Narada. So our feelings of gratitude and feelings of dependence and feelings of great respect, those proper, appropriate feelings for such qualified persons, helps us do all of our activities with love. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.